So we left off yesterday analyzing the Rishami's Chiddush that Bishul Min HaTorah, both for the purposes of Bas B'Cholav as well as for the purposes of Shabbos, is only violated if a person cooks Al Gabia Eish itself. At least that's what many thought the Rishami would say. However, even if that is in fact the Shittas Rishami, that is far from agreed upon that that is the Shittas Bavli. And the Ran in Masechta Shabbos made a little bit of a cryptic comment yesterday that it would appear that the Chachmei Bavel disagreed with that premise. How did the Ran know? What does it say in the Bavli that we question that premise? Now, that premise is critical for our entire discussion because the Rishami was the source for the idea why we differentiate between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni. If the Rishami is right, that Bishul D'Arayis has only violated Al Gabia Eish Mamish, then we understand why also Harchokal Kli Rishon, also Harchokal Kli Sheni. We understand why Min HaTorah Bishul is violated on the fire. Mid the Rabbanon Bishul is violated even off the fire. And not even Mid the Rabbanon is there any problem at all once it's transferred into a next utensil. So according to the Rishami's model that Bishul Agabi Eish is Nesem Min HaTorah, that is very, very helpful to solve our problem as why it's Lishayin Mavasha. But the Ran tells us that is probably not the view of the Bavli. How did the Ran know it's not the view of the Bavli? The Ran didn't tell it to us. The Ran never explained to us where in the Bavli he saw that Bishul is violated D'Oraisa, even Shul Agabi Eish. So we had two possibilities. One was our Gemara in Chulin that talks about Bosa B'Cholav with two people sitting at a table. It's unlikely that there's any fire present at the table. But we said at the end of the show yesterday, well, maybe there is. We said maybe you're talking about two guys eating out of their sternos. One guy's eating his beef and broccoli with a fire underneath. One guy's having his macaroni and cheese with a fire underneath. So maybe that's the Bosa B'Cholav D'Oraisa. And then we began to focus on the Gemara in Shabbos of Lamed Ches, which is really going to become the focus of today's Shiur. So let's go back for a moment, back to that Gemara, because that's going to become the pivotal Gemara to try to prove what is Bishul D'Oraisa. Is there a requirement of Eish present or not? So let's go back to the seventh of the Marmikamos, bottom of the page. Ein nos den beitza b'tzaramecha b'shul t'shaltes galgel. One is not allowed to put an egg next to a hot pot in order to enable the egg to hard boil, to become literally able to be, to turn. It's galgel, an egg. If you take a soft-boiled egg, so a raw egg, so it doesn't turn, you can't spin it. Take a hard-boiled egg, so it spins. So you're not allowed to take a raw egg and expose it to a hot pot in order to enable it to hard-boil. That's also in Shabbos, which the Gemara raised the question, Yibailu Gilgal Mayim. What if a person went ahead and did that? Is that a violation of a Torah prohibition or not? I'm Rav Yosef Gilgal Chayv Chatzos. Rav Yosef said, that yes, that is a violation in HaTorah of Bishul. What's the issue? What was the suffix of the Gemara? So the Poshim Shat, the suffix of the Gemara was, is that there's no fire. When I take an egg and I'm putting it up against a hot pot, the pot presumably is removed from the fire. That's what's called an halacha toldos ha'esh. So I'm cooking with something that was exposed to a flame. So the Gemara wasn't sure, is that chayev or not? So one could argue that that was the conclusion of the Gemara, that yes, Yechayev Chatas for that. That's one possibility in the Gemara. And the Gemara goes on to say, we're going to prove to you that I'm a Marbrei Dravina, Afananami Tanina. We're going to prove that there is Bishul D'Oraisa, even though there's no flame present. Kol Shiba B'Chamim Flea Shabbos, Shoda Sabachamim Shabbos. Anybody that was cooked from before Shabbos can be re-soaked in hot water on Shabbos. Ein Bishul HaChabishul. Kol Shiba B'Chamim Flea Shabbos, something that was not cooked from before Shabbos. You can wash it off with hot water because presumably that's already too far removed. But if you take small fish or certain kinds of very, very small, delicate foods, what we call in halacha the kali habishul, and you pour boiling water onto them, that can be bishul d'araisa, shmavina. That's a proof positive that a flame is not necessary. So the Pashut Pshat of this Gemara, says the Ran, argues the Ran, is that the existence of a flame is not critical for Bishul to take place without Torah. Proof positive. I put an egg against a hot pot, or the sugi was called Kali HaBishul. I wash off Kali HaBishul with boiling water. Hadachosin Zui Gemar Malachton Shmamina. That's a proof positive that I'm going to be Chayev. Let's analyze
this. Is this all based on the fact that whatever we're talking about, it's an extension of Aish? It's not
Okay. That's going to become important. As the sugya is going to unravel, both in this sugya and the following sugyas, we're going to come back to that. So are we totally ignoring Aish? Or are we saying that this is an extension of the Aish? That's a very, very important question. We're going to have to come to that a little bit later on in the sugya.
Rebbe, the phrase Hadachatan hu gmar melachtan, that's a very strange phrase. It seems like it's not really cooking. It's
excellent. Okay, you're Mamshah. I couldn't have placed you better. You're about to be Dochem Araya. So I just presented the Ran. The simple pshat in this Gemara, this is most probably what the Ran had in mind, is that from the fact that we're chayav for pouring boiling water over a raw piece of fish, where's the fire? Where's the Aish? You see, from here, the Aish is not so important. You see from here that you don't actually need the Aish. You see from here that it's not critical. You could be chayav skila for bishul and Shabbos without an Aish present. As long as the job is getting done, as long as the bishul is being affected, that's bishul d'oraisa. If that is in fact the view of the Talmud Bavli, then the Rishalmi's assessment that bishul requires Aish is not accepted. If the Rishalmi's statement is not accepted, that we can no longer understand what's the difference between Klisha and Klisheni. Once you tell me flames and fires are not so important, what's the difference whether it's one time removed from the fire or twice removed from the fire? So we're back to square one. So the Chora, we discovered the Gemara. We discovered the Talmud Bava that the Ran was referencing. This Gemara that says that there's Bishul Deraisa on Kali HaBishul by merely pouring boiling water, that seems to be the proof positive that there is Bishul D'Araisa without a flame. However, could perhaps one be Deichid Araya? Could one possibly reject this Raya? So, Ha'ara was just made, correctly so, that the phrase that the Gemara uses to describe the Malacha D'Araisa here is very, very strange. The Gemara, the last line of the 7th of Ramah Kama is, Chutzper Malach Yashu Kuis Ispinin, Shahadachasan Zuhi Gemar Malachtan. Washing it off is the Gemar Malacha. Washing it off is the end game. Washing it off is the problem. Gemar Malachton is a very bizarre phrase to use in the kitchen. The term Gemar Malachton is usually synonymous with a totally different Malacha, the Malacha of Makab Patish. Let's say I have a table and a leg broke off. So I go ahead and I take a screwdriver, screw back the leg in. That's called Gemar Malachton. Gemar Malachton is synonymous with the Malacha Makab Patish. And here, the Gemar uses that seemingly bizarre phrase in the kitchen. It's in fact this that led to some achronim to say, some achronim suggest that when the Gemara says Zui Gemar Malachton, it doesn't mean bishul. When you pour boiling water over your raw herring, that's not a violation of bishul. I didn't say it's not a violation of deraisa. It is a deraisa of a different malacha, the malacha being makab patish. If that's the case, if the Gemara in the 7th of the Ramah Kama is not even talking about bishul, so then this Gemara bears absolutely no bearing in our entire discussion. We're trying to bring a raya. Can you have bishul without a fire? So we thought, oh, a raya brewer. You could have bishul with pouring boiling water. You could have bishul without a fire. Wrong. Maybe you can't have bishul without a fire. You can have other malachas, but you can't have bishul, and therefore this has no impact in our discussion. So although this idea is taken from a group of acharonim, and again, they have a deal from the Lashon HaGemara, the Chasson Zugman Malachdon. The Mishnah Berurah quotes these Acharonim and strongly, strongly disagrees with these Acharonim. The Mishnah Berurah, very, very powerful, argues that there's no such thing as Machma Patish when it comes to food. The very Malacha Machma Patish doesn't lend itself to food. Now, this is always a tricky thing. There are certain Malachas that just don't apply to food per se. Let's say, Lamashal, the Gemara has a discussion in Masechet Shabbos about the malacha of ma'abed vis-a-vis food. Ma'abed means to take animal skins and to soak them, to prepare them in such a way, to strengthen them, to harden them, to make them available, make them enable them to be able to ride on them, or to use them for shoes or belts, whatever you can use for leather. So that's one of the lamed test malachas, the malacha ma'abed. So Gemara raised the question, the Sechah Shabbos, if a person takes a piece of food and preserves it and salts it and prepares it in such a way, it also gets very hard. Is that considered to be malachas ma'abed or not? So I guess like the modern day equivalent would be like making a beef jerky. Not that I know too much about making beef jerky. But the Gemara talks about you take a piece of meat and you salt it and you prepare it in such a way that it gets so hard. So is that considered to be malachas ba'abed or not? So one opinion of the Gemara says yes, and we paskin no. We paskin then ain't ibud ba'oichon, at least b'na Torah. The malacha of the ibud just doesn't land. The food is a different story. There are food malachas, and then there are animal skin malachas, and the two don't overlap. Well, let's say the Rishon Mechalek is about the malacha of tzeveya when it comes to food. Is there malacha of tzeveya of dyeing, of coloring? So we know that if I dye a piece of wool, that's malacha deraisa. If I color a food, so that's a big malacha, like Rishonim, is that considered to be a malacha bechlal? Maybe that malacha of tzeveya only lends itself towards wool, material, etc. It doesn't lend itself towards food kind of items. So it's always very, very tricky when you're dealing with certain malachas, which malachas spill over to food or not. So the Mishnah Berura very, very strongly believes that the malacha of Machmer Patish just doesn't even speak to food bechlal. It's not even the pasha, not even the ballpark to speak about malachas Machmer Patish concerning food. And therefore the Mishnah Berura doesn't believe that the malacha involved in washing off the salty fish is malachas Machmer Patish. The Mishnah Berura believes that it really is malachas bishul. And if it really is malachas bishul, so then we're back to where we were, in a good place. Namely, then we have a raya from the Gemara that bishul can apply even without a fire, which again is important for us in terms of Bas Bechol, in terms of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, etc. So again, so we started off with the Rishami. The Rishami, at least according to some versions of the Rishami, was making a sweeping statement that bishul requires esh to be present. And if that's true, then we understand fully well why Kli Sheni and Mavashel, because Kli Sheni is just too far, you're not going to make a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. It's bad enough to make a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan on a Kli Rishon Shlagav Eish, but to make it on a Kli Sheni is just way, way too far. So if you accept the Rishami's premise that Bishul D'Raisa requires fire, then I understand the distinction between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. But if you reject Rishami, then we don't understand the difference. So one reason to reject Rishami is based on this Gemara. The only way to salvage the Rishami is to, in a sense, reinterpret this Gemara, to stick this Gemara into a topic of Machmer Patish and take it out of the parasha of Bishul. So one of the very, very strong rayas that the Mishnah Berura has, that this sugya is not talking about Machmer Patish, but it's very, very much talking about the Bishul, is the Lashon HaRambam. If you take a look at the eighth of the Maror Mekomos, so the Rambam in the second line, in the middle of the second line, V'chein Madiach B'chamen Malich HaYashar Kulsha Ispirin. If a person washes off with hot water these salty fish, or this klis ispin vudag dak verachbiya, it's a very soft kind of a fish. Harei ze chayef. One is chayef. Why is one chayef? Shahada chosan bechamin, because washing these fish off in hot water, look at the next words of the Rambam. Zehu gmar bishulon. That is the completion of the bishul process. Notice the shift in the Rambam. The Gemara says malachton, and the Rambam plugged in the word bishulon. So it is clear, says the Mishnah Berura for the Lashon HaRambam, that malachton did not mean to conjure up the image of Machmer Patish, but rather it meant very, very much bishulon. It was just a poetic way of describing bishul, and therefore the Gemara is talking the language of bishul. So it comes out that the Mishnah Berura is very, very much supported by the Lashon HaRambam, that in fact, you can have Bishul D'Oraisa even without literal Eish, at least in the scenario of Kaliyah Bishul, and therefore this spells trouble for the Rishonim. Just as an interesting point, there would be a potential serious nafkamina whether we understand this din of washing off the salty fish with hot water as being a Bishul issue, or as being a Machmer Patish issue. This is not just an academic question. This is a real life question. What would the din be if I have a very, very salty kind of a food and I want to wash it off with cold water and thereby making it edible? So before I wash it off, it's impossible to eat. I want to soak it in ice cold water. So if you hold that the issue involved is Machmer Patish doesn't need heat. Machmer Patish can equally be violated with cold water. So the Mishnah Berura quotes, there are some folks who will say, if you have a very, very salty, inedible food and you want to prepare it to eat on Shabbos, it's awesome in a third to soak it, catch this one in cold water, called Machmer Patish. It's like screwing in a table leg. And the Mishnah Berura says he finds that impossible to accept. He says, if that was true, then the Rambam wouldn't have switched words from Hadachas is Ugmar Malachta, Kumar Bishulam. Mishabur says it's only Bishul that's playing out. It's no Machmapatish. It's Het the Gomer with cold water. No Machmapatish by foods. So even though Mishabur is very, very strong on this, I thought that perhaps one could bring a little bit of a raya to those who disagree. There may be a raya from a different aspect than Hilchos Shabbos that may indicate that there is a concept of Machmer Patish on food. That's a sugya actually that appears in Maseches Beitza. The second paragraph of Maseches Beitza tells us one is not allowed to be mafresh, chumus, and maestros on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Why is that? So the Gemara says it's mechse kimisachin, it's nira kimisachin. It looks like you're fixing the food. Before you separated the chumus and maestros, the food was off limits, it was tevel. Now by fixing it, you're making it edible, so you're in effect fixing it on Shabbos. Now truth to be told, it's only a mechzek in Mesachin. It's not Mesachin d'araisa. The Mechaz Chinuch says the reason why it's not Mesachin d'araisa is because it's only a halachic tikkun. It's not a physical tikkun. And Hilchos Shabbos generally, at least according to Mechaz Chinuch, follows what's called a physical tikkun, not a halachic tikkun. So there's no d'araisa involved in separating tumas and maisos, but it's still prohibited mid-rabbanon. And the reason why it's prohibited mid-rabbanon is because it resembles machmer patish. L'chora, if the malacha machmer patish d'araisa doesn't speak to food altogether. So what kind of a resemblance to Makbapatish is this? It's so off the charts, it's so far removed from the D'araisa Tikamal and Makbapatish. Why did Chazal make this Gezeira? So it would appear from the fact that Chazal made the Gezeira called the Tikkun Rabbanik and D'araisa Tikkun. They were Mesake in the prohibition with the Rabbanim of Nechse Kimakbapatish on foods because there is a D'araisa on foods. Now again, in order to violate a D'araisa in food, it has to be a physical Tikkun. It has to be something like soaking in hot water or in cold water. It has to be something that actually transforms physically inedible food to becoming edible. That would be a D'araisa on Shabbos. It's only because Makbapatish D'araisa exists that Chazal extended it to make Makbapatish D'Rabbanon. So again, it's just a ha'ara. It's not a kasha gemura against Mishnah Berurah. It's just a ha'ara against the Mishnah Berurah. But going back to that story.
Rebbe, wouldn't that be something like almost like a nolad? If it wasn't available before Shabbos, how can you make it available on Shabbos and eat it?
Oh, okay, very good, excellent. So nolad is really a loaded question. Nolad is far from being usur. You know, we used to think your beitzah should nolad be under being usur. We're trained to think nolad is usur, but the truth to be told is that that's one of only four different pshatim in that mishnah and beitzah, and it's far from clear that we even accept the principle of nolad altogether. And even if something is nolad, it's not always so simple. What's called nolad? What's not called nolad? So there are a lot of factors going into any given nolad question. But again, putting aside the potential issue of nolad, whether there's a problem with Makbapatish is dependent upon this machlokes, the Mishabur and other Echaranim. Does the Malacha Makbapatish even speak to foods in the first place? So we're going back to the drawing board because our goal is really to understand why cliché in Mavasho. Now, although we've been spending a lot of time learning sugyas of Masechah Shabbos the last day or two, this is really started out as Bas B'cholot, so you really learn Masechas Chulin now. Shabbos is for the Sunday morning show. We're learning Masechas Chulin right now, but as we can already tell, there's going to be a lot of overlap, particularly in these sugyas, between Bas B'cholot and Shabbos, because they both revolve around the same nekud, the same point, what's called Bishul. So the Gemara made a statement, both vis-a-vis Shabbos, as well as Bas B'cholot, Klisheni and Bavashel, and we still don't know why is that true. So we had a suggestion of the Rishami, but that was far from agreed upon the way we thought it meant. And even if it meant that the Ran rejected the Rishami in deference to the Bavlim. So we are looking around for another possible reason why Klishei Eidim of Ashkel. So we are not the first ones to raise this question. Tosfos already, on the spot of a Shabbos, raises this question. Let's take a look at the ninth of the Marmakomos, where Tosfos is really in the most famous formulation of this question. Tosfos really literally goes into the lab for us and illustrates to us what exactly the problem is in the sugya klisheni. So the Gemara says the ninth of the Marmakomos to the Tosfos, Shema mino klisheni mevashel. That was the story of Rabbi Dan Nosi, where his Talmud wanted to bring him oil and to heat up the oil in the bathhouse. So Rabbi Dan Nosi told him, don't take the oil, don't take the jug of oil and put it into the water of the bathhouse, because the water in the bathhouse is a kli rishon, because there's a fire underneath the bathhouse. So that water is a hot tub water, that's a kli rishon water. Rather, take some of the water and put it into a bucket and then put the hot pitcher, I'm sorry, then put the pitcher of oil into the hot bucket, and that was okay because cliche the end of Mavasha. So he asked Tosfos Tema, Maishna cliche and Miklirishan. What in the world is the difference between a cliche and a Klirishan? The Iyad Saladis, Mamon Shach says Tosfos. if the water is yatsa lettuce bo, the water is hot enough that if you put your hand to it, you're going to pull your hand away. That's the shear for heat for bishul. So then if it's hot enough, if it's 190 degrees, so then even in a cliche, it should be a problem. The E ain't yatsa lettuce. And if it's not yatsa lettuce bo, I feel the klurishin ami in mevashos. Then even the klurishin should be mutter. So just because the pot was on the fire, but if it's cooled down to now it's only 95 degrees, so it's beneath yatsa lettuce bow, so why should that be a problem, even in klirisha? So basically Tosis poses the question, how could it be that there's some kind of absolute split in halacha between klirisha and klisheni? Doesn't bishul depend only upon the temperature of the water? And if the temperature of the water is above yatsa lettuce bow, that should be a problem. If the temperature of the water is beneath yatsa lettuce bow, that should be permissible. Ma nishtana klirisha from klisheni. The yeshloima says Tosfos, the fish of klirishon mitoch she'omad al ha'or dofnosav chamin umachzik chumo zman meruba. So comes Tosfos and says the following, that a klirishon was on the fire. That's the very definition of what a klirishon means. A klirishon was on the fire, and therefore not only was the water hot, but the walls of the pot were hot as well. Dofnosav chamin. The walls of the pot were exposed to a fire, because by very definition, that's what a klirishon means, a pot that was on the fire at one time. The walls are hot, and therefore the walls are retaining the heat for a while. Ulekach nasta b'shir, therefore the halacha gives the shir, the chosman she yatsa lettuce bow also. Chosman, that the water is yatsa lettuce bow in this pot, which has the hot walls, that's called the prohibition. Aval klisheni, I forgot the yatsa lettuce bow. Even though Tosfos concedes, if you stick a thermometer into the water, believe it or not, the klisheni water may be hotter than the klishen water. But it's still mut. You know why? She ain't dofnosav chamin v'hoyuch miskarer. Because the walls are not hot, and therefore the walls are what's called the defaros bekaros, they're cooling down, and it's the cooling down of the walls that is impacting on the bishul and actually detracting from bishul reaching its completion. So comes tells us and almost gives us a brand new definition, what factors go into defining bishul. Up until 5 minutes ago, I thought that bishul is determined by the heat of the water. Tells us says, that's true. That's one of the factors that goes into defining bishul. There's another factor as well. The other factor is it's not just enough to measure the heat of the water, but you have to assess what's the status of the defunus as well. What's the status of the walls of the pot? That's also critical. And if you have both heat of the water and defunus mechamamos, that's bishul. And if you have the heat of the water and you're lacking the defunus mechamamos, or the other way around, you have the defunus mechamamos, but the heat of the water has gone down, so then you don't have bishul. So says Tosfos, that's the answer to the secret, that's the answer to the riddle, why cliche in a mevashel? Not because the water is lacking, but because the walls of the pot are lacking heat, the fatas bechkaros, and therefore bishul deraisa cannot take place. It cannot take place neither vis-a-vis Hilchos Shabbos, nor vis-a-vis Bos B'cholov, and that is the answer to these two statements of Chazal, why both for Shabbos and for Bos B'cholov, cliche in a mevashel. The question is, although we're not arguing the Tosfos facts, we are questioning, where did this come from? Where did Chazal figure this out? Why is that so important? Isn't bishul just simply a function? What do I care whether the walls are hot, the walls are cold? Why do the walls play a role? So Tosfos just discovered for us a physical phenomena that's present in a klirishon. It's not present in klisheni. And Tosfos has decided for us that physical phenomena is making all the difference in the world. But conceptually, why? Why should that be so important? It's very, very hard Tosfos to understand. So there is a suggestion that's given Vedasa Tosfos. There are some Acharonim who may say it somewhat independently from Tosfos. But it's actually the first time that I ever saw this appearing in print, this idea, appears actually in a footnote in Reb Shimon Eider's Sefer in Hilchos Shabbos. Some of you may remember back in the 1970s, so Reb Shimon Eider was the Sefer on just about anything and everything in Halacha L'maaseh in America. So I grew up on Reb Shimon Eider's Hilchos Pesach Svarim, Hilchos Shabbos Svarim, his 3-week Svarim, his Dalad Nidim Svarim. I've said this many times, that I think that that all the minhagim of all the sleepaway camps in America, what you do in the 3 weeks and what you don't do, what you do in the 9 days, what you don't do, you know, the halachas and the minhagim of the time, the ben hamitzarim, the 3 weeks and 9 days, are very, very tricky. It's very hard to plug in exactly how many of these minhagim and didn't play out this manazah. So Rav Shimon Ida was the one, I think, who set the policy for all the sleepaway camps for the last 50 years. From the most yeshivish to the most modern, I said that somehow became the book, because there's nothing else. They were great svarim, and they were very, very easy to read. They were these little small pamphlets. They're very, very easy, quick chick-chack to look things up. And they had all the psachim of Ramosha and other Gedolei Poskim in America that really, really put things into practice for us today. So in Rav Shimon Ida's svarim in Hilchos Shabbos, so he quotes in a footnote. Remember, again, there are others who say this also, but that was the first time I ever saw this. And a footnote that what the Bir and Taisa seems to be is as follows. That a principle that we find very often in Hilchos Shabbos, that in order to be chayav for any malacha on Shabbos, it's not enough just simply that the malacha gets accomplished, but the malacha has to get accomplished in the normal manner. And if you do something in a bizarre way, if you do something in a strange way, that cannot possibly be a violation of Hilchos Shabbos. If you do things kaliach hayad, so Shabbatina suggests that maybe that's all the Tais is driving at. Tais is not driving at any deep, dark secret in terms of you need hot walls, because the halacha b'shemesidin hot walls. Tais is just simply assessing what the normal method of bishul is. You ask a normal person, how are you going to cook something? Are you going to cook something in a pot which is hot, where the walls are hot, where it's going to be easy to cook it, or you're going to choose to cook something in a utensil that the walls are already cooling down. You're already one step out the door. You're already on the process of cooling down. That's not called derech bishul b'kach. And since it's not called derech bishul b'kach, that by definition can't be a violation of bishul d'oraisa. So it's not that there's some deep, dark secret of halacha moshe m'sinai, that cliche in a mavasha because it's lacking the heat of the walls. It's just part of a regular, the general picture in Hilchos Shabbos of things that are done in an abnormal fashion. So by definition, that cannot be a real violation of a bishul d'oraisa, because it's just not normal. If that's the case, that when Tosfos says the tfanos b'chamos versus tfanos b'karos, they're not referring to some almost like objective halachic criteria, but they're referring more to just a mitzias advarim, what the norm of people is. If that's the case, then we could suggest that even within the world of klisheni and mevashel, it's not an absolute truth. Klisheni and mevashel is not always. Klisheni and mevashel is only true if and when it's not normal. But if for whatever reason a particular food would present itself, this kind of a food is normal to cook in a klisheni. This kind of a food, people do cook in this kind of a utensil, even though they're quote-unquote defanos mekaros. If that would be the case, then we would be right stuck again with a bishul d'oraisa. If you learn that Tais is some kind of objective halachic criteria, don't ask me any kashas, don't throw any curveballs at me, just that's it, that's the way it is. Cliché de mevashel, end of discussion, so then it's an end, there's nothing to discuss. But if you're willing to tell me, like that Tosos never really meant an objective halachic criteria. They were just simply describing the mitzias of Kiryach Hayad, so then Kiryach Hayad changes sometimes. So that would explain very well the sugi of Kali Abishal. Remember going back to the sugi of Kali Abishal, remember the salty fish, the food, the very, very delicate, soft kind of foods that are easily cooked. The halacha tells us that if you cook Kali Abishal in a klisheni, that's an isidir aisa. Why is that an isidir aisa? If Tosos is right, that you need the funas mechamos. Without the funas mechamos, it can't be deraisa. How in the world can Kali Abishal be deraisa? So the answer is Tosfos never meant to say that klisheni is an absolute no bishul. All Tosfos meant to say is that 95% of the time klisheni is bizarre to cook in because of the funas mekaros, and therefore, if you cook in an abnormal fashion, that cannot be deraisa. But if you cook a type of a food that is normal to cook under those circumstances, such as Kali Abishal, because Kali Abishal, by their physical nature, don't require such an intense cooking, so people don't think you're crazy for cooking Kali Abishal in a klisheni. If that's the case, then it could not be deraisa. I'm going to jump ahead and give almost an example of this. That, again, there may be a lot of nuances to this part of the sugya. Hopefully we're going to talk about this as we further develop some of the details of Rishon HaKlisheni in further sugyas. But let's say as follows. If you see a person taking a raw piece of chicken and trying to cook it in a klisheni, you're going to look at him and say, that's very, very strange. So the guy's going to say, but what do you mean? But the water's hot. So I said, the water's hot now, but in 5 minutes from now, it's not going to be hot. So you would laugh at such a person. Who might be sugar is going to cook a raw piece of chicken in the klisheni? I'll zen them a klisheni in the vashem. What if you see a person taking a tea bag and putting it into a klisheni of water? Would you say to that guy, you're a mishugina, what are you doing? What crazy person cooks tea bags? Don't you know that the funos makaros? The guy says, what do I care about the makaros? It takes me 3 seconds to make the cup of tea. By the time the funos is going to be makaros, the tea's going to be made already. So you don't think a guy's crazy for making a cup of tea in a klisheni? If that's the case, that may throw a monkey wrench into, would it be permissible to make tea in a klisheni? So if you're telling me that the whole reason why cooking in a klisheni is basically because it's kaliachayad, it's an abnormal fashion of bishul, and that's all that Taisus meant, klisheni and mavashal is not an absolute halachic statement, it's simply a reflection of the mitzias. Well, if the mitzias changes for any given food, then the halacha is going to change in turn as well. So again, I didn't come to paskin either for or against making tea in a klisheni, but that's something that we definitely have to keep in mind as the sugya develops a little bit further. So again, so we have a little bit of an overview as to how to understand this basic principle, klisheni and mavashel. So this principle is true. It's a statement of Chazal clearly, both in our sugya and chulin vis-a-vis bas v'cholov, as well as on the flamet ches, inside of mem and Shabbos vis-a-vis bishul b'Shabbos. So the facts are klisheni and mavashel. Why is that so? So we had the Yerushalmi's attempt that maybe it's based on the fact that all bishul d'oraisa requires eish, and we were very, very weary about following the Yerushalmi. We weren't even sure the Rishami said it. That's what we spoke about yesterday. We're not sure that the Bavli agrees to it. That's what we spoke about today, the pros and cons of the Bavli. Then we went down a different approach. That's the approach of Tosfos, the klisheni and mavasha cause of the funas makaros. But even within Tosfos, we weren't 100% sure. Is Tosfos going down some halachic criteria of the funas and makaros, or is Tosfos just simply a reflection of what the norm or lack thereof is vis-a-vis bishul? So we have a few ideas flying around what's considered to be the rationale behind klisheni and mavasha. What we accomplished now is really, in a certain sense, the academic part of the sugya. We try to set up the stage academically to figure out why this principle is true. But now it's going to set the stage for us, hopefully, for future sugyas, to fine-tune what is a klisheni. You can only know what a klisheni is or is not if you understand what makes a klisheni work in the first place. So hopefully, Mitzvah on Friday, we're going to continue with further sugyas, which are going to open up the sugyas even more for us, both in terms of bishul bas v'cholov, as well as in terms of bishul b'Shabbos, based on some of the ideas that we're talking about now, to try to flesh out a little bit the sugyas of klisheni as they play out again, both in terms of Maseches Chulin as well as Maseches Shabbos.
This Tosfos also seems to say that that you don't need a fire for Kli Rishon, because it's also